Hi, this is Our Community, and I'm Candace Michelle. You know, I remember thinking back in August of 2017, when the Chetco Bar fire was raging within a few miles of us, that we needed a local news source better than Facebook to track the fire's progress and the evacuation notices. That was the beginning of KCIW imagining itself as that local news source. Over the next year or so, we wrote and submitted a grant proposal to Meyer Memorial Trust to design and build a news department. In December of last year, we were informed that our grant was funded and we began the process. Without a doubt, the most critical component was finding the right person to head up this new venture. Luckily for us, my guest today had recently moved to town from a career in journalism and media in San Diego, California, and this is right up her alley. She's also become a dear friend. Welcome to the show, Lori Gallo-Stoddard.
Hello, Candace.
Hello, Lori. It's so nice to have you here.
So uncomfortable to be on this side of the microphone.
Isn't it?
Asking the questions, so you've turned the tables on me. Thank you very much.
You're so very, very welcome. Well, it's good for you. It's a growing experience.
Right. It's a good experience.
Yes.
Yes.
That which does not kill us makes us
stronger.
There we go.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Lori, why don't you just tell us, you know, a little bit about you. San Diego, right?
Well, from San Diego, grew up there, actually moved there from New York when I was six. My dad was working for the aerospace industry.
Oh, and New York? Where in New York?
I was born upstate New York in a little town called Ellenville.
Oh, I was born in Ithaca.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So much in common.
I know, it's amazing. So aerospace, what was he doing?
He was working for NASA. At the time, there was a company called General Dynamics in San Diego, and they actually had a little park called Rocket Park because they made parts for the spacecraft that were going up. And this was in 1963.
Okay.
1963. So I have a picture of myself at Missile Park in Kearny Mesa in San Diego standing underneath the rocket because it was
so
a very big
cute.
Deal.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
So basically grew up in San Diego, graduated from Claremont High. People might know Claremont High as Ridgemont High from Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
No way.
Yep.
That was... Oh, that's funny.
My brother Glenn was in school. I'm 6 years older than my youngest brother. And Cameron Crowe was a Rolling Stone reporter. And everybody at school knew that he was writing a piece for the Rolling Stone, did not realize it would turn into a movie.
Wow.
But yeah, I recognize a lot of those cats.
You know what I think is really funny? Because when you told me this about Cameron Crowe the other day, and Alicia Crowe, his mother, was my guidance counselor at San Diego City College.
What a small world.
I know.
What a small world.
Really is.
Yeah.
And San Diego was just, I remember I was there in the early 70s, and wow, what a beautiful place.
Well, I graduated in 74, so we were there at the same time, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was beautiful and different back then. It was still kind of a small town.
It's
not so much so anymore. It's gotten very urban.
Right.
Very urban.
I don't think I've been back in like 20 years or something. I don't know that I could.
We left 3 years ago. We actually, I've known my husband since we were in junior high. So my husband and I.
I love that.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
It's, you know. He was the one. I knew it back then when I was 12. But yeah, it's changed a lot. We moved 3 years ago, and we were in sort of a unique situation because we'd moved to the North County. If anybody knows San Diego, we were right by the Wild Animal Park in Escondido.
Ah,
and
yeah,
we had 5 acres and an avocado ranch.
Mm.
So we were kind of outside of the matting crowd, which was a good way to raise the kids.
Yeah.
But in 2014, both of the kids had graduated from college, and it was pretty obvious that they didn't want to come home and be our roommates.
Shocking.
So
I'm shocked.
And they were moving north.
Yeah.
So our son wanted to move to Portland, and that was his big thing, and he's done that. He's also followed in my dad's footsteps. He's an aerospace engineer.
Wow.
And is working for a company that provides parts for SpaceX.
So, oh, no, that is too funny.
Yeah, so it's kind of nice that the world does that.
Yes.
But my daughter moved to Oakland, and so we thought, well, where can we go that's near them? Because it was pretty obvious that they were going to be gone permanently. So we decided to move to Oregon, and people kept telling us, Brookings, Brookings, go to Brookings. And we tried to come to Brookings, our first two trips to Oregon, but the rain was horizontal, and the wind was putting all of the pine trees against the ground.
Oh,
so
yes.
We didn't quite, we were thinking, I don't know. But we finally made it to Brookings. And once we got here, we realized that this is where we wanted to be. So we bought some property and we are building a home. And here we are. Halfway between
it.
Oakland and Portland. That's exactly where
that.
We
That's
needed
perfect.
To be.
Perfect. Yeah. That's perfect.
Yeah.
So let's go back to San Diego, because as much as you know, I like the present, I have to admit that those were some great days in the past in San Diego.
It was a different
it really
space
was.
And time.
It
yeah.
really was.
Yeah.
It was OB, Ocean Beach.
I was an Obetian.
Were you?
For those who don't know, Ocean Beach is kind of a hippy-dippy enclave. In fact, while I was living there, we voted against having a Jack in the Box come in because we were against all corporate.
Of course.
So, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
But delightful. I mean, there's just something so delightful about hanging out in OB.
It wasn't scary.
No.
It wasn't scary. It wasn't
not at all.
I mean, there was a lot of drug use. There were a lot of homeless people, but it was really a community that opened its arms and heart in many, many ways to help those less fortunate. So it was a fun little funky place to live. I enjoyed it.
Now, my daughter was born in San Diego.
Oh, yeah?
I thought I was going to do a home delivery, although I didn't actually tell my obstetrician that. and it all went sideways, and I ended up, you know, having a C-section. And,
oh, my gosh.
You know, but it was all very interesting, and it was, you know, it was back in the day when, you know.
When it was groovy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you thought you could do stuff like that. Well, you know, I was 22 at the time, so of course you think you're invincible and, you know, can accomplish anything that
right.
you want to.
Yes.
You know, you just say, oh yeah, I think I'll do that, you know. Yeah.
And it always turns out so well, right?
You know, it turns out. That's about all you can say.
True.
And if you live through it, then yes, it turned out really well.
What doesn't kill you
makes you strong. Exactly. Okay, so here you are in San Diego, and you've met your boyfriend, who's going to become your husband eventually. And
I knew him, mm-hmm. but he didn't know me.
Oh.
I saw him when, back in those days, right, you went to junior high. So you went to elementary school till sixth grade, and then seventh, eighth, and ninth grade was junior high.
Right.
So the junior high that I went to was right across the street from Claremont High. It was called Marston. And Marston pulled from, I think, about a half a dozen different elementary schools in the area. And so that's where I first saw my husband, Tony, was in the lunch court at Marston Junior High School.
Aww.
So I was 12, and I thought he was so cute. And my best friend, Anne, we used to call him T.S. to a T, and I would write notes to her in Mr. Springer's history class. Oh, saw T.S. to a T today at the lunch court. He's so cute. Such a fox. But he never knew I existed, and, you know, it was one of those things. But fast forward to the summer of 75, and my friend Anne, that I used to write the notes to about T.S. to a T, and I were going to the beach. And remember, this was a very different time. So if kids are listening, don't try this at home. But we were taking the bus to the beach, and if a cute guy came by, we'd stick our thumb out to hitchhike. So Anne said,
oh, how well I remember those days.
Right?
Yes.
Again, it was a different time. It
very
wasn't so
different
scary.
Time.
Wasn't
yeah.
so scary. So she said, oh my God, it's TS to a T. So I said, okay, well, I'm sitting next to him. So I sat next to him and I said, oh, I'm Lori Gallo and you're Tony Stoddard and how are you? And oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Anyway, he dropped us off at the beach. And in the meantime, I think I was honing my investigative skills back then because I found out where he was living.
Ah.
He had moved away. He'd gone to Arizona for high school, basically, and had come back after high school to live with his mom. His parents were divorced, and dad was in Arizona, and mom was in San Diego. So anyway, I found out where he lived, and the next day got on my 10-speed and rode over it must have been 6 or 7 miles from my house, straight down a very steep hill, and knocked on the door, and he was there, and spent the afternoon with him. And
You are a bold
you know
girl.
I don't know where I got
that's wonderful.
Well,
yes,
anyway, he threw my bike in the back of his truck and took me home.
Oh.
And we dated for like the next 3 years.
That's great.
It was wonderful.
Yeah.
But then he moved away. He moved to Colorado for 10 years and I didn't see him and speak to him or anything like that. It wasn't a bad breakup. It was just kind of one of those things. You're kids, you're teenagers.
Right.
But 10 years later, he was making a life change. So he had built up a business in Colorado. He was a contractor and he'd built a house. He sold his house. He sold his business. He decided that he wanted to join the Army and fly helicopters. So he had joined the Army under this delayed enlistment program, and he was going to go in as a warrant officer pilot. Well, very long story short, he came back to San Diego to ship out from his mom's house. He hadn't seen his mom in a couple of years. And at that time, I was working for a show, and I was on the air. I was only on the air for a very short 3-year period of time. I'm not really comfortable being on air. But I was working for a show, and they were a union signator, and if you did anything on air, you got extra money. So I was all about the cash. we did these. It was a fun show. It was kind of like a Saturday Night Live kind of a show. So anyway, he was at his mom's house, and he said, "Mom, Lori's on TV," and she said, "Call her up, have her over for dinner. Let's see how she's doing." So he did.
Great.
And he ended up not going into the military. And that's another story. But he ended up not going into the military. And we were married less than a year later. He knocked on my door. I was living in Ocean Beach at the time. He knocked on my door. And I was really nervous. You know, it's like, what's he going to be like? And oh my gosh, what's he going to look like? And is he cute still? And all of that. He knocked on my door. And I smelled him. And I gave him a hug. And I just felt like I was home. That was in 1987.
Amazing. What a delight.
Meant to be.
Yeah, obviously meant to be. So we're going to talk a little bit about what your professional life looked like in San Diego. I just want to remind our listeners, for those of you who have just joined us, this is Our Community, and my guest today is Lori Gallo Stoddard, who is heading up our brand new news department. Yahoo! So, Lori, you're in San Diego. Tell me a little bit about your professional life. How did that all get started?
Well, I graduated from high school in 74 when I was 16 and didn't know what I wanted to do. I just knew that high school was not for me. So I went to junior college for a couple of years. And then
where'd you go?
Mesa.
Yay!
Mesa. We used to call it MIT. Mesa.
Oh, that's pretty fun.
Yeah, Mesa Junior College, or Mesa Community College, I guess is what it is. And coincidentally, my friend Ann, who TS to a T, Ann, is a teacher at Mesa College.
Oh, that's
so it's kind of funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I really wasn't sure what I wanted to do. And my dad, who was single, was dating a woman who was the owner of a company that did props, locations, permits for movie companies, folks who were coming to San Diego to shoot their films.
And there probably were quite a few starting to do that, because...
Not at the time.
No.
At the time, the San Diego Motion Picture Bureau was kind of just a dream.
Oh.
It had... We kind of started at around the same time, and So we kind of worked hand in glove with the San Diego Motion Picture Bureau, which was part of the Chamber of Commerce. So it was a business kind of a thing. They wanted to bring folks down. We were cheaper. I'm assuming that San Diego is still cheaper than
oh, I'm sure.
And a lot easier to get permits and things than in
absolutely.
LA.
Absolutely.
So I started working for that company. And didn't really know what I wanted to do at school. I was taking a lot of history classes, but you know, I just really didn't know what I wanted to do. And I was young. I wasn't even 18 yet.
Oh my God.
So yeah. So I kind of worked for them, and then from there went to work, dropped out of school, didn't really want to be in school, and was just kind of taking a couple classes at night to keep my fingers in the pie, but wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. So over the next couple of years, until I was 21, I worked at an advertising agency. I did a lot of writing. I then started working for the San Diego Motion Picture Bureau. And I was working on their direct mail campaign. So I was, you know, calling all the producers and putting together packets of information and saying, come on down, come on down. And then when I was working for the ad agency, I wasn't really satisfied. It was just a job. I wasn't happy particularly. I mean, it was a job.
Yeah.
And I woke up one morning and I woke up and said to myself, broadcast journalism. And I, honest to God, did not know what it was, whether it existed or anything. It was just one of those things where I knew I had to check it out. So, as I say, I was still taking classes at San Diego State. So I went to the journalism department and I said, do you offer broadcast journalism classes? And they said, yes. And even though you've got 4 years of college, you can't take any classes until you take the prerequisites. And I said, no. I don't do prerequisites. Give me a test and I'll test out of it.
Right.
So they gave me a test and I tested out of it. And I ended up taking a class that was being taught by the NBC weekend anchor, a guy by the name of Dennis Morgino. Morgino's a great guy, obviously Italian. So we just became friends. He was a good guy. He's still a good friend. I mean, he's still a friend after all these years. So as a result of taking that class, part of what was offered and the reason that I took that class was that it was an entree into getting an internship. Ooh. And at that time, all of the TV stations in San Diego offered internships, and that was basically unpaid slave labor.
Right.
But it was a great—
But you got to learn.
Oh my gosh.
Right.
I was writing for the 11 o'clock news as an unpaid intern.
Wonderful.
And I tell you, the first time I saw my story get read, you know, because I would read the stuff, I would write the stuff that was possibly cut for time.
Mm-hmm.
So when you build a newscast, you build extra stuff in there knowing that things might go long and you might have to cut things. So you plan on what you're going to cut. So most of the things that I wrote never saw air. But the first time the news anchor, Paul Bloom, read my stuff, I tell you, I died and gone to heaven. It was the best.
Oh, that is. That's wonderful.
It's fun.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so you were taking this class, and then what happened?
Well, so I ended up getting a job at the CBS affiliate for $5 an hour. I thought
good
it was
for you.
Part-time, $5 an hour,
big
baby.
Money.
Oh, yeah. And worked in the newsroom as a writer and then as a producer, also as an assignment editor. And an assignment editor is a pretty important job because basically if you think about the news of the day as going into a big funnel, it's the assignment desk's job to sort out what's most important, to prioritize, to decide, you know, where we go, what we cover, and also takes care of all of the breaking news, all the spot news. So I would sit in a glass booth, glass office, that had scanners running. So I was listening to Coast Guard, fire, rural fire, San Diego fire, Escondido fire, all the fire departments, the police, sheriffs, and all, you know, rescue.
All at one time.
Different scanners going at once, but you get an ear for it.
Okay.
So you learn to hear, you have selective hearing. Okay. But I'll tell you, I would go home at night and I would just hear scanners all night long.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But interesting, right?
Yes. Yeah. Because you were right there. In fact, one of our, you develop relationships with people because you do what's called a beat check. And that's something that KCIW is going to have to be doing, is to develop a beat list and a beat check.
What does that mean?
A beat check is basically you call everybody on your beat. So we would call the sheriff's department. Hey, anything going on tonight? Call the police department. Hey, anything going on tonight? I heard that there was an accident over on Euclid. Sounds like it was a nasty one. Is everything okay? Those kinds of things.
Right, right.
So during my beat checks, the people who would work the same shift that I would, you develop relationships with them.
Right.
And one of the guys that I developed a relationship with actually ended up being the chief of police and then the mayor of San Diego.
Oh, so, you're kidding.
No, and I knew him when, but I'm not going to tell you who it was.
Okay, don't. But how amazing is that?
Yeah, it was cool. It was very cool.
Yeah.
It was very cool.
Excellent. So you were doing that?
Was doing that. And then in 1984, so I had been in news for almost 5 years. In 1984, the gentleman who was the news director at the CBS affiliate that I worked at, who was brilliant, guy by the name of Jim Holtzman, and wonderful, 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 creative person. And he developed, at that time, news was still holier than thou. It wasn't sponsor driven. We weren't told what we had to cover by the sales department.
Interesting.
That came a few years later.
Mm-hmm.
And he developed, not only did we have a 5 o'clock newscast, we also had a 6:30 newscast and an 11 o'clock newscast, and he started a 4 o'clock newscast. So we were, but they were all different shows, different,
okay.
Like the 4 o'clock, actually it was 4:30 to begin with, and I worked on that show, was interview based. So we would have one or two segments of news, and then we would have an interview with a newsmaker of the day. So that was wonderful. I got to meet such incredible people. A lot of who we met were actors and actresses who were coming in through the old Globe, but Lily Tomlin, Janet Leigh, Camelot, who's the actor who played in Dumbledore, the original Dumbledore. Oh, gosh.
Oh, yeah.
Richard Harris.
Thank you.
There you go.
Yes.
James Earl Jones. I mean, just wonderful. It was just magical.
Yeah.
It was a really cool time to be there.
Yeah.
Well, Jim Holtzman, who was the news director, got permission, and the company at the time was a family-owned organization, so got permission from the owner to start a new show. And this show was going to air pre-prime time. We were going to go 7:30 to 8. And it was going to feature, it was going to feature people in San Diego. So there would be a lot of people stories. It was going to be hosted by a gentleman named Larry Himmel. And Larry was a comedian who at that time had a segment on the newscast called Larry Himmel at Large. So the show was called San Diego at Large. And it was the most fun I've ever had, ever. We did, like I said, we did feature pieces on people. Like, for instance, here's a good one. There's ravioli that's sold at Costco by Mama Lena. Mama Lena's ravioli. Well, Mama Lena really existed, and she was this little old Italian lady, and they had this factory on El Cajon Boulevard. So we went out.
Funny.
So those kinds
yes,
of things.
Yes.
Those kinds of things. But then we also did, you know, skits, and we had a segment that I produced called Eyewitness News. So we would take the news of the day and do a little twist on it.
Kind of
like Saturday Night Live does now, but
right.
We were pre all that. So I guess I...
What a delight.
It was a lot of fun. And that was
so
the show that
fun.
Tony saw me on.
Okay.
My husband.
Yeah.
So, yes. So
fun.
A lot of fun. Until...
Until?
Until the sales department got mad at us.
Why?
Well, because we weren't kind to all of the sponsors or commercial folks on the station. We would make fun of things. And so we were canceled.
Oh, no.
We had high ratings. We were doing very well, but there was some political stuff going on. So we got canceled, and I went to the NBC affiliate to go to work. And at that time, the NBC affiliate was going through some management changes. And one of the things that they wanted to do was to promote their newscasts throughout the day by doing mini newscasts. Oh. And so, right up my alley.
Wow.
So because I'd had production experience those few years working for San Diego at Large, it was a lot more than just point and shoot a camera and run and gun and, you know, spray down the accident or do the interview and go back to the station. We got to take a little bit more time to do things. And I learned a little bit about, you know, making people want to watch and those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So that was a great job for me working in the promotion department. Well, that ended up being a wonderful opportunity for me. I actually ran the promotion department for a while and worked with people that I'd known for years in the news department. It was very, very comfortable for me. Well, one of the guys that I worked with was the chief photographer. His name was Danny Mendez. And Danny was, again, super creative, beyond his job description. And so with Danny, I produced some documentaries for Channel 39. I did a whole lot of news pieces. So, you know, just kind of kept
fun.
Oh, it was wonderful.
Yeah.
It was wonderful.
It was wonderful. Absolutely. And you were producing it, so you were on, you were basically in charge.
I'm my own private Idaho. Yeah, it was great. Nobody told me what to do. I liked it.
I love that.
Well, also at the time, like I said, they were going through some changes at the station, and that was when talk radio, conservative talk radio, was first getting started. Mm-hmm. And there was a gentleman named Roger Hedgecock, who was on the same station that ran Rush Limbaugh, the radio station. And the general manager for KNSD, where I worked, had a background in radio. He came from CBS Radio. So he was all about taking radio stars and making them TV stars.
Oh.
So I produced Roger Hedgecock's show. I launched it when it went on the air and produced that for, I think, about a year. And that was extremely difficult. That was tough because Roger didn't understand TV,
mm-hmm.
and he didn't understand that his audience was largely female. And so I had to fight for things like, we had Helen Reddy was one of our guests, mm-hmm. who came on, and I had to fight for that. We had Ally McGraw came on, and I had to fight for that. And so it was
how odd.
No, not odd.
Not for the time.
No.
But unfortunate.
Really unfortunate. Mm-hmm. Because it could have been so much better than it was.
Yeah.
So much better than it was. But in all of that, obviously I was working under the eye of the GM, mm-hmm. and they knew my skill set. And so they kind of pushed me around. They offered me opportunities. Mm-hmm. I'll put it that way. Mm-hmm. They offered me opportunities in different parts of the station. And one of the places that I went, because of my work with Danny, one of the projects that Danny and I worked on was something called Hispanic Moments. And so we did profiles of some of the unsung heroes of the Hispanic community. We profiled a federal judge, Irma Gonzalez. We did this guy who was a Boy Scout leader who didn't have kids anymore in the scouting world, but he still led troops and took them on campouts.
Oh,
nice. Oh gosh, he was just wonderful.
Yeah.
But But that brought me in front of clients. You know, I had bad experience with San Diego at Large making fun of folks.
Yeah.
Now,
yes.
I was working with these folks because we were having them sponsor, you know, we would do a This has been Hispanic Moments brought to you by San Diego Gas and Electric Company. Mm. I had to work with clients.
Right.
So that put me in close working relationship with a guy who ended up leaving the NBC affiliate and going back across the street to the CBS affiliate and opening up a production house, an in-house production house. And he asked me to go with him.
Oh, wow.
So I did.
Excellent.
And that was in 93. And so I worked there for a couple of years. And it became, and I did multiple shows then. Obviously, I wasn't working in news, but I was still writing and producing in the same skill set.
Right.
That was a real experience. Because I recognized that I was bringing all of this money into the station, but I wasn't necessarily getting a piece of it. And I also recognized that I could go out and do that for myself. So in 98, I started freelancing.
No way. That's excellent.
But the beauty of all of that was that in the interim, I had made some great relationships. Mm-hmm. One of them was with Cox Communications. In 96, the Republican convention was held in San Diego. Bob Dole was the candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a week's worth of shows called The Unconventional Show, where I had a local comedian, a guy by the name of Rick Rockwell, who I'd known from San Diego at Large. And I had him go around town. We went around looking for Bob Dole. And so we showed up. It was so much fun. We went to the Wild Animal Park to camp Snore and Roar. And at the beginning, I was like, you know, 7 o'clock in the morning when the campers were coming. I was like, have you seen Bob Dole? And people played along with it so much. It was great.
Fun.
It was a lot of fun. But that was with Cox.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of years later, Cox in Orange County ended up hiring me. I started off I freelanced some shows for them and they hired me. To do sponsor-driven advertising.
Excellent.
And yeah, it was great. So I worked there for a couple of years and then didn't like doing the drive and it wasn't working out. So stopped driving up regularly.
Right.
But that was just a great experience as well. And right after that, I started doing infomercials.
So before we get into your infomercial stuff, because I definitely want to hear that. And I also want to hear isn't there a Walter Cronkite story?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Yeah. But before we do that, I just want to let people know who've just tuned in that this is our community. And my guest today is Lori Gallo-Stoddard, who is heading up our brand new news department. So, Lori, now can you tell me about Walter? Because I love this story.
Well, again, Cox Communications was one of my clients. And in about 2000, San Diego hosted, and they had done it a couple of years in a row, something called Insights. And it was just a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to have some of the best and the brightest in the world gathered to give speeches and seminars and perspective.
Nice.
As to what was going on. So I was hired by Cox because I'm a really good interviewer, which is why I don't like doing this. I'm on the wrong side of the mic.
Fine, honey.
So Cox hired me to go to the convention center and to interview all of the speakers as they came off the stage. So as part of that, I interviewed Walter Cronkite. Well, actually, not Walter Cronkite that day, but I interviewed Bob Dole, General John Shalikashvili, who was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Ah.
George Stephanopoulos. Bob Dole was there. Benazir Bhutto, who was the Pakistani president who was assassinated. So it was a. Robert Reich. I interviewed Robert Reich. He was. I didn't know anything. I didn't really know anything about his background at the time. I mean, I knew he'd been in the Clinton cabinet, but that's all I really knew about him.
Right.
That guy could get a job anywhere as a stand-up comedian. He was funny. He was fast. He was amenable, open. I was very surprised by how much I genuinely liked him. And Benazir Bhutto, what a wonderful woman and what a tragic story. When I interviewed her, her husband was in prison. They didn't. She didn't know if he was going to survive or not. Family members had been killed. It was a wonderful experience. The keynote speaker for that Insights was Walter Cronkite. And so the day before I interviewed all these famous folk, I interviewed Walter Cronkite. And what they do for something like that is they set Cronkite up in a room, and then you bring in your camera and you interview him, and they, you get a certain amount of minutes and you have to leave.
Right.
Well, because I was doing this for Cox for posterity, and I didn't have a deadline, I was the last person to interview Cronkite. Now, when I worked at the CBS affiliate, Cronkite was the anchor. And so there was always a Cronkite tape, right? So who's got Cronkite? Who's got Cronkite? So I started my conversation with him by saying, you know, I know you really well. I've had you in my hand. So anyway, ended up having a really nice conversation with him. And everybody who previous to me had asked him about, you know, Kennedy, when Kennedy was killed and you cried, and the space launch and all of those things. Well, I had found out that as part of his contract to come and speak at Insights, Cronkite insisted that he do a seminar with high school students. And that surprised me. That is surprising. Well, that kind of made my little brain kind of go. And so when we were talking, you know, it was a good give and take, and there was a lot of laughs, and it was a nice, easy interview. But then I kind of brought it back and I said, you know, Mr. Cronkite, you are in the twilight of an amazing life. I know you like to sail, you've got your boat. I know you've got family that you like to be with, but you are making a point of sitting down with high school kids? What the heck? And he said, it's our duty. It's our duty to make sure that the generation coming up has the information to make good decisions, and we need to train them to be good critical thinkers. And for me, that was one of those moments that I will never forget. The way he was so passionate about saying, it's our duty. So.
It's kind of like a light bulb going off, you know?
Well, listen, this guy had the flipping life.
He was getting ready
to retire, or he had retired.
Right.
He didn't have to do that.
No.
But to have that kind of, that sense of responsibility, I just really admired that.
Yep.
So after our interview, he shook my head and he said, you asked excellent questions. And just was like, oh, he thought I asked excellent. Oh, it's great. Oh, my goodness. So the same photographer, I had the same photographer the next day when I was doing all of these interviews with the people coming off stage. Well, I did not know, my back was to everyone, and I was just looking at the person that I was interviewing, who was kind of against a wall. I couldn't see anything going on behind me.
Right.
So I did not know that while I was interviewing the general, John Shalikashvili, Cronkite was standing behind me, like watching me talk to him. So when we wrapped, he came around the side of me, shook the general's hand and said, doesn't she give a great interview, general? I was like, oh,
wow.
So the best part of this is that it wasn't said just in my earshot.
Yes.
My photographer also heard it. Yes. So that's a thing. We still speak. And he says, well, you know, Cronkite said you give a great interview. So that's my big claim to fame is Cronkite said that.
You know, frankly, it's a big deal.
It was a big deal.
It still is a really big deal. Yeah. I mean, Walter
Cronkite.
It's Walter
Cronkite, friggin' Cronkite.
I know, right? I mean, he's like the guy.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. It was very cool.
So, this is so about 2000 now. You're kind of in the year 2000-ish.
And I worked for Cox as an employee for a couple of years until about, mid-2002. Maybe fall of 2002, I worked for them. And then again, I was freelancing. So, and I ended up working for a couple of years doing training videos for the state of California for law enforcement.
Oh, wow.
That was kind of cool. Actually, we were given a day. We had the producers who did these post things were honored with a resolution and, you know, a big deal by the state of California. Yeah, it was a kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
So I learned a lot doing those pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Because these were training videos for officers. When you are in when you're a police officer or when you're in law enforcement, you have to have X amount of hours per year to make sure that you're up on all of the new laws.
Right.
Right.
Exactly. Right.
So I did one on domestic violence. I did one on hate crimes. I did half a dozen of them. I don't remember all of them.
But that's fascinating. So you would have to, obviously, you'd have to research the law. So you'd have to know what the law was.
Well, the laws, and then working with subject matter experts. Mm-hmm. What we would do is we would gather subject matter experts in the room and talk to them for a couple of days. What are the issues? So, for instance, with domestic violence, a lot of times officers would miss cues, right? So you go in and there's been a fight, obviously, and the person who hasn't got bruises says things like, oh, come on, honey, it'll be just like our vacation to Hawaii. It'll be fine. It'll be just like our vacation to Hawaii. Well, you need to ask what happened on that mm-hmm. vacation to Hawaii
right.
privately, because it might be that vacation to Hawaii line was a veiled threat. So, because maybe the last time they were in Hawaii, she had a couple of broken bones.
Right.
So those were the kinds of things that I did. Mm-hmm. I'm teaching officers to listen more
mm-hmm.
carefully.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating.
It was.
I mean, when you look back over everything that you've done, I mean, and we're just talking 2002 at this point, it's like really a lot of different things.
But a lot of different things, but it all comes down to a curiosity,
mm-hmm.
right? You're
mm-hmm.
curious about a subject
mm-hmm.
and the ability to communicate a good story. That's all it is. It's taking what you have, the information that you have, and putting it in a way that's easy for people to understand. And so I've always thought that news was a lot about education, because too often we just get the content, but we don't get the context. So I am
Why do you think that's important?
Because you can't make a good decision or you can't understand something completely until you know it. And so
And it's not just knowing the facts, but it's knowing what the circumstances were that are surrounding those facts that brought it into being.
It's all about Hawaii. Don't you remember Hawaii?
Yeah.
So that's content into mm-hmm. context, right? So one person might think of Hawaii as being a wonderful place, but mm-hmm. for this person who was physically abused in Hawaii, it's not that. So we need to put the content into context,
mm-hmm,
right? So if you just
mm-hmm.
know the content, which is, honey, how about Hawaii? Don't you remember it?
Right.
Then it doesn't mean anything until you put it in the context of she was in the hospital for 2 weeks when they went to Hawaii.
Right.
So, I mean, not to be a downer, but that's...
No, no, no. But it's a lot more work to do that.
Right, but it's part of being, it's part of the service. I mean, that's part of being a professional, mm-hmm. is making sure that you do things properly, mm-hmm. and that it is communicated properly. You can be the most incredible reporter in the world, but if you can't write and you can't communicate, I mean, you could be a great gatherer of information, mm-hmm. but unless you can regurgitate that out in a way that people understand and can apply to their lives, mm-hmm. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. So. Basically, it's useless.
It's completely useless. Yeah.
I mean, it's nice to be able to spell. You know, spelling is, you know.
Well, you don't really have to spell if you're speaking your script.
Well, that's
script.
True. I can sit here and spell the words, but.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, okay. So, so what happened between then and you coming up here? You were.
I worked in infomercials. I did infomercials for multiple years. And again, infomercials kind of brought together all of my skill sets and all of my experience, because I'm a good, Walter Cronkite says I'm a good interviewer.
Yeah.
Says I give a great interview.
Thank you, Walter.
So I'm good at interviewing people, and infomercials are kind of driven by testimonials, right?
That's right.
Oh, this is the best wrinkle cream I've ever had. My wrinkles are gone. Well, in order to get people to use the name of the product and
right.
to say the things that you want them to say,
right,
you have to be a decent interviewer. So
right.
That's what I did for years. But
excellent.
had a lot of fun doing that. Really, a lot of fun. Got to meet some amazing people. Worked with Jennifer Beals from Flashdance.
Yes.
I did 4 shows with Joan Rivers.
Oh.
Who was.
Wow.
So much fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
She was, I can't say what she said because she used lots of 4-letter words.
Of course.
but she was just, she was a wonderful, wonderful person. She gave the crew cookies at the end. Nobody gives the crew cookies at the end. She brought cookies for the crew.
Oh, that's wonderful.
But she was, I'll tell you, she was standing up delivering lines, and she had on high heels. She was always dressed to the nines. I mean, she was just perfectly dressed and hair and everything.
Right.
And we had to have a special filter on her lights. She had this pink scrim that we had to use. Anyway, she was standing there kind of blowing her lines, and it was the end of the day, and I looked down at her feet, and they had mushroomed over her high heels.
Oh, no.
I felt so sorry for her, and
yeah.
I said, Joan, take off your shoes and stand on an apple box. You don't have to wear those shoes. She goes, no, honey. It helps me to focus.
Oh, God.
So I was like, okay.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Your poor toes.
Well, she said, beauty knows no pain.
Oh, yeah.
So, okay. All right.
Whatever.
Yeah.
I think it's very painful, but, you know, yes.
She did. But anyway, yeah. And so the last one that I worked on was with Sarah Ferguson, the Duchess of whatever she's.
Yeah,
Duchess
York
of,
or something.
Duchess of York,
yeah.
I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she was a hoot.
Huh.
She was amazing. She was talking about insecurities, and I said,
hello?
You don't own this?
Yeah.
You don't own what you have? And she said, no, I don't. And I said, oh, wow. That's just beyond me to have all of that
mm-hmm.
she had. I mean, she had minions on top of minions,
yeah.
can I tell you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Wow. So, okay, so what possessed you guys to come up here and build a house? Because seriously, I'm just saying, I've watched you for the last 2 years now, and I can't imagine anything harder to do.
Oh, huh. It's not hard.
Really?
No, uh-uh. I'm really lucky because I got the best man on the planet.
Mr. Wonderful.
Mr. Wonderful.
Hello, Mr. Wonderful.
and
he is an absolute, I just have to say, he's one of my favorite people on the planet. next to you. He's one of my favorite people.
Thanks.
I mean, he's just an absolute delight. And a little shout out to Charlie, the golden retriever, because Charlie is one of my favorite dogs on the planet. So
Charlie's a sweet boy.
Yes.
Charlie's a sweet boy.
So yeah, you absolutely won the lottery.
I think so.
I know so.
I think so.
He's a
delight. He can do anything. He can fix anything. He can build anything. And I mean, we came up with a little bit of money. Not a lot of money, a little bit of money. We felt lucky to have what we came up with. And we realized that we could buy something that was existing, but we would want to redo it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So it just made more sense for us to build something. And as of today, knock on wood, we have a roof and some windows.
Yay!
So
you have windows.
Oh, we have windows.
Oh,
yeah. No doors.
No, okay.
No doors.
No doors. Well, no, you know, who needs doors for heaven's sake?
Yeah, but we've been living in an RV on the property. And
how many square feet?
Little.
Yeah.
I think like Tony added, I think it's like, well, it's less than 300. It's very small.
Yeah, so that would just drive me crazy.
Well, yes. Now that we not only have the wonderful golden retriever Charlie, but we've welcomed back into our home Jack, who is a 175-pound giant Alaskan Malamute who had been staying with our son. So I literally live in a doghouse.
Okay, he is huge.
He's huge.
Met Jack.
Yes,
and he waddles.
He's
huge.
He looks like a bear. He's a really big dog.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
yeah.
Delightful. I mean, he is. He's got a sweet person. Oh, come on.
He's delightful.
He's got a sweet personality.
Super delightful. So delightful. No, he's great. He's great. Yeah. He's a good boy.
So when do you anticipate your house being finished?
Definitely by Christmas.
Oh, my God, Lori.
So I think, well, it's just us. We're kind of, you know, it's us.
Yeah.
So I think, well, we have an inspection coming. I think we're going to have an inspection in another couple, 2, maybe 3 months. And then after that, probably another 6 months. So yeah, we're probably talking about 6 to 9 months, honestly. But
yeah,
we can move in there earlier.
Good.
So
good.
Just don't tell the inspector.
Yeah. Okay. We won't. Shh. Quiet.
Right.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the news department, because that's pretty exciting for
Very
us.
Very exciting.
Yes.
Very exciting.
So it really was my feeling that it came out of the Chetco Bar fire, that it was ridiculous for us to be dependent on Facebook.
Although, big shout out to Jan Barbas.
No, I agree.
Who did a great
masterful job
keeping people informed.
I agree.
It was, I mean, I'd love it if he came and worked with us at KCIW in the news department.
Yep.
I think he did a great job.
Yep.
But yeah, you're right. It's hard to find, and not everyone has a computer,
right.
And not everyone had electricity at the time.
Yes.
I mean, there,
lots of people had already been evacuated.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
So having a place to go to, a community radio station that has made relationships, does the beat check, does the phone calls, makes the relationships happen so that you can call somebody, you know, at 9 o'clock at night and say, hey, this is going down. Do you have a comment? Can you help us out with it?
Right.
What's going on? Give us the scoop. So I'm hoping that we're just building out the space, and we are getting the computers in that we're going to need for our citizen journalists to write on. I'm putting together some basically how-to pamphlets. Writing for the ear is very different than writing for the eye. So we are absolutely looking for journalists.
Mm-hmm.
We are absolutely looking for volunteers. I'm not quite ready for them yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to probably be another 4 to 6 weeks before we're operational.
Mm-hmm.
We are doing some pieces as we move forward. We just did a piece on the hospital versus the ER. What's best? We'll be doing some follow-up pieces on that huge.
That was an
issue.
Excellent piece, by the way.
Well, it was mostly done by people's voices. Yep. I mean, it was great.
It was quite well done and very comprehensive.
Well, content into context.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It's important.
Exactly.
It's important. So we will be looking for folks, and we will be training folks.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be curious if you're interested.
Mm-hmm.
You just need to be curious, and you have to be willing to learn how to write in broadcast style. And really, that's about it. It's not brain surgery.
But the relationships are really important.
The relationships are critical.
And the ability to build the relationship and sustain them is what seems to me to be important.
Well, if you can't ask the question, you can't get the answer.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't have a relationship with someone, if you don't have a phone number from someone, you can't ask the question.
Right, right.
So it's important that, to me, as we move forward and do our newscasts, that we are clean, that we tell.
And what does that mean?
It means that we don't have an agenda.
Mm-hmm.
It means that there's not a slant to any of the pieces. We all come to every single moment of our lives with judgment, right? We
right.
all have an idea of how we feel about something. It's very important that that judgment be suspended in order to tell a complete story. So if I'm alienating one of the board of commissioners, then that person isn't going to respond to me when I ask for information on something. So you never want to burn a source. You definitely want to be clear and honest and put content into context. One of the things that we did in the hospital piece was to note that the physician who was speaking at the board of commissioners had contributed to one of the commissioner's campaigns. And that's an important thing for people to know, for listeners to know.
Right.
Because, it's content into context.
Right.
Does that mean that this person is getting more time at the microphone? Does this mean that this person is feeding, whispering into an ear that maybe somebody else isn't whispering into? So it's just important for there to be transparency.
Right, right. Excellent. Good. Well, it's exciting, you know. I mean, it's the beginning of a news department, and it's pretty exciting stuff.
I'm really, really happy and grateful to be part of it. And I hope that as a thing begins, that this begins in a way that is helpful to the community and that is a resource for the community. Because, frankly, it's important for people to have a voice, and I hope to give people a voice. I mean, we plan to do a lot of man on the street kind of things and bringing people into the studio for their perspective.
Excellent. Lori, we're just about out of time. I don't know how it happened, but it did. I want to thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks
it's
for having me.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
For you.
It has been a pleasure for me. How exciting. And that's what it's all about, my pleasure.
Oh, gosh.
Thank you for being on the show. And you've been listening to Our Community here on KCIWLP. My guest today has been Lori Gallo-Stoddard, who's heading up our news department. If you enjoy our programming and want to hear more, consider going to our website, kciw.org, and becoming a member. We're volunteer-based, so if you have some talents you'd like to share and want to play with a great group of people, think about volunteering. And finally, if you own a business and would like to sponsor a show, let us know. This is Our Community, and I'm Candace Michelle. Thanks for listening.